Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Since the election, how you doing?
Well, I've been sleeping like a baby.
Yeah.
Sleep 2 hours, wake up and cry. Sleep 2 hours, wake up and cry.
You know, I'll probably get back and take a deep breath. And I haven't had much time to really settle down and figure what life's going to be like after this. I know I'm going to be in Texas. No doubt I'm heading straight home. I miss Texas. I love Texas. I've got a lot of friends in Texas. I will probably write a book. I'm going to build a policy institute and a library at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas.
A library!
Other than that, I'm just not quite sure yet.
Well, there's always a job in Saudi Arabia waiting for you, which leads us to the first story on the Savage Nation. Because when I saw it, I said, is it a mad comic story? What am I reading here? I said, is this a mad comic story? It's impossible that this is really true. Is this a satire in the Washington Post? Is it a script for South Park? No. The story is Saudi Arabia to lead UN Faith Forum. So my headline on michaelsavage.com with the attached correct article from the Washington Post, my headline says, imagine an animal rights forum in China. Now, of course, Dianne Feinstein would not want Michael Savage to have a website or a radio show because it's not correct. She used the word correct earlier. Correct, as in politically correct, as in communist. China, as in communism. That's where the phrase political correctness came from. The article says Saudi Arabia to lead UN Faith Forum. Saudi Arabia, the oil-rich Islamic kingdom, it's a fascism, by the way. It's an Islamo-fascist dictatorship, which forbids the public practice of other religious faiths, if you can believe it, will lead a two-day UN conference on religious tolerance. Now, that unto itself would be comic, but it isn't comic when you consider that President Bush will be there, the stooge Israeli President Shimon Peres and Israeli Quisling will be there, and the communist Prime Minister of England, Gordon Brown, will be there. The question is, why would Bush go? The answer is because of the photo of Bush being led around by his pinky by the King of Saudi Arabia going back many years. It explains President Bush's entire 8 years in the White House. It explains the Iraq War. It explains everything Bush has done. Now, I remember saying to this audience several months ago, long before the election, that if you think that the damage that Bush has done to this country is bad, you ain't seen nothing yet. This is before the collapse of Wall Street. This is before the so-called $3 trillion bailout of his cronies on Wall Street. But it isn't even over yet. There are many days left. There are 2 full months left for Bush to show his true colors. We haven't seen who he's going to pardon. But did you know that one of the two brave Border Patrol agents who were arrested for 12 years, tried and convicted in a kangaroo court in Texas, and were sent to prison for 12 years, they were retried, and one of them was just given another 12 years? Did you know that? This is what Bush is doing in his last days. But my friends, Bush is not finished yet. No, he's going to go to the UN, the so-called United Nations, to a UN conference on religious tolerance that is being led by a fascist dictatorship in Saudi Arabia that forbids the practice of other religious faiths. Now, you say to yourself, that's impossible. No, it isn't impossible. This event is one that was paid for by the Saudi King Abdullah. He says to promote an interfaith dialogue among the world's great religions. The Saudi leader agreed for the first time to dine in the same room with the Israeli president at a private pre-conference banquet Tuesday. Now, read that sentence to yourself over and over again. The Saudi leader agreed for the first time to dine in the same room with the Israeli president. Read it over and over again. If you remember what apartheid was, if you remember what slavery was, if you remember what racism is, you'll understand the Saudis are probably the most racist people on the planet. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon hinted that the two leaders were not seated at the same table. You can't have slaves at the same table as the king. Ban said, normally in the past they have not been sitting in the same place. This is very important and encouraging. And I don't want to read the rest of what the front man for the United Nations said. The Saudi initiative emerged in the summer during a meeting of religious leaders in Mecca. The Saudi leader subsequently drew a range of religious groups, including Jews, Muslims, Christians, Hindus, Taoists, and others. We don't know if witches are included. Together in Madrid in July, where they signed a declaration calling for greater cooperation among religions. Well, I guess the best place to begin with cooperation amongst religions would be for the king of Saudi Arabia to permit Christianity, for example, to be practiced openly in Saudi Arabia. What do you think about that one? Secretary of State, so-called, Condoleezza Rice Aroney, planned to attend the conference to hear the Saudi king's opening address. President Bush, the lame duck president, is scheduled to address the UN tomorrow. The UN said that it welcomed the Saudi initiative, and it supports the right to practice one's religion and other principles of religious freedom enshrined in the UN charter. However, here's the important point for you to remember. Saudi Arabia's sponsorship of this event drew criticism from so-called human rights advocates who said that a country that oppresses its religious minorities lacks the moral authority to lead such a gathering. Here's what they said. Saudi Arabia is not qualified to be a leader in this dialogue in the United Nations, said a Saudi national. It is the world headquarters of religious oppression and xenophobia. So there it is. They all know that Saudi Arabia is a fascist dictatorship. They all know that it's a racist nation. They all know that the Saudi kingdom forbids the practice of other religious faiths. And yet, there is a forum, a U.S. conference, a U.N. conference on religious tolerance. Now, that's bad enough, but Bush is going to it. I want to ask you something. Can you imagine something equivalent to this? Yes, I can. Imagine an animal rights forum in China being presided over by the communist Chinese government or their officials, a country where they raise dogs and beat them to death in cages for human food. Give me equally absurd future conferences from the UN. How about a women's rights forum that would be led by Somalia? Or wait, I have a better one for the gays of Hollywood. How about a gay rights forum led by Iran's madman dictator Ahmadinejad? Would you like that, a gay rights forum led by the Iranian madman where they kill homosexuals, or a women's rights forum led by a Somali where women have no rights, or an animal rights conference led by Chinese nationals from communist China where animals are tortured for human food? Well, that's exactly what this is. That's exactly what this is, a two-day UN conference on religious tolerance led by Saudi Arabia. Bad enough, but why is Bush going? The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Of course, to me, the lead story is that Saudi Arabia is going to lead a UN faith forum when it's a nation that does not permit the public practice of other religious faiths. That is bad enough, but we expect such absurdity from the United Nations, don't we? But why would President Bush go there? I think you can pretty much figure out why Bush would go there. Remember the famous picture of Bush being led around by his pinky by the king of Saudi Arabia? It explains the last 8 years. WOR, New York City. Steve, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, you're being too hard on President Bush, and I'll tell you why. If you're like me and you know some people who've been involved with the Joint Terrorism Task Force from 9/11 on, from Bush down, the single-minded focus is to prevent a horrible catastrophe going on in this country. And I'm talking about nuclear weapons. And the worst thing...
Hold on. That's too much for me. You are alleging that our Department of Homeland Security stopped a nuclear attack in America. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying they've stopped it, but I'm saying they play down the threat And I think President Bush deserves...
Well, hold on. No, no. I want to go back to that grandiose statement you just made. You're alleging that the Bush administration has actually prevented a nuclear attack on America. I'd like to know where the evidence is. I would love to know that.
You are misstating what I said. Their concern is that it happens. I didn't say that they've prevented an attack, but I think the threat is real. I think they play it down publicly. But I think President Bush, I think he deserves more credit than he gets. Now, maybe to the point where he's become diverted from other things. Which
well, hold on now. Why would he go to a religious forum at the UN run by Saudi Arabia when they're a racist, anti-other faith nation? How do you explain that?
You know, Mike, we can pick apart the moral relativism of any president. I'm not happy with it, but think about it.
Oh, now you're not happy with it. Do you think he has to go to this? Why does he have to go to this?
I'm not happy with it, Mike, but I got to tell you this. President Bush, more than any other president, understands the threat of Islamic terrorism, and he's the only one to do something about it.
Is that right? Then how come he's just directed the FBI to drop the phrase Islamofascism? In fact, to stop using the phrase Islamic with regard to terrorism at all. He just did that last week. Are you aware of that?
I don't have a problem with him doing that, because if you remember when the Abu Ghraib scandal hit... And
see, you are a front man for the Bush administration. You have no problem with anything he does. Because you work for a government agency.
No, I'm an average guy from New York, just like you, Mike.
Why are you so tied to the Bush skirts, then? Why can he not be Why can he not be criticized when he's perhaps the worst president in American history?
I don't think he is, Mike. I respectfully disagree.
I know he is, and that's why we have the next worst president in American history waiting in the wings. The reason we have an Obama, who is an inexperienced charlatan, as president of the United States coming to power January 20th, 2009, is because of George Bush's ineptitudes and insanities. That's the only reason we have Obama. What do you think, America's in love with this fraud?
Why don't we let history judge, Mike?
Again! Here we go again, Mr. Benevolent. So now you love Obama as well?
No. No. No, because he doesn't understand the threat. President Bush does. And I'll tell you how I know that, Mike, and you'll agree with me. When those pictures from Abu Ghraib came out with the prisoners naked, with the dogs barking on them, I said to myself, that comes right out of a textbook on how to deal with Islamic terrorists who don't even value their own lives. And we call that, some people call that torture. Well, let me tell you, John McCain would have preferred...
Well, hold on. You're getting way off the track. Where does George Bush fit in on all of this?
You don't think he had something to do with authorizing the way they dealt with detainees in Iraq and at Guantanamo? Absolutely. How do you deal with a prisoner who wouldn't respond to physical torture, wouldn't respond...
Well, now you're changing the argument. We all agree that they have been treated too nicely. We all agree that the exposure of the photos from Abu Ghraib were run by the radical left in this country with their Islamic buddies releasing those photographs. We understand that they have destroyed us and our ability to fight the war on terror effectively. But I totally disagree with you when you say or allege that the government has stopped a nuclear attack on America. I don't believe that's true.
I never said that, Mike. What I'm saying is that is a real, legitimate concern.
All right, you're a Bushy. I understand that. You'll have a portrait of him forever on your mantle.
I'm not a Bushy. I voted for Democrats and Republicans. I look more towards the person. And you may not like him. You may think he's the worst, but the impression I've gotten is, you know, they all lie, Mike, but he seems more sincere to me than anyone we've had in recent years.
Of course, but there are degrees of lying. There are degrees of incompetence. There are degrees of inarticulateness, and there are degrees of nightmares produced by presidents. This man ranks amongst the highest.
I disagree, Mike. I think after a couple of
years...
No,
I'll tell you what. I know I'm right, and I know you won't agree with me, but my proof is that Obama, a complete charlatan without any experience whatsoever, was elected completely as a reaction to George Bush, not because the people loved Obama so much. They wanted anything but... George Bush. They wanted anyone who reminded them of anything but George Bush. That's why McShane got defeated.
Mike.
Now you're going to tell me you love John McCain next.
No. A sign of wisdom is being able to admit you're wrong, and I know you have wisdom, Mike. Give it a couple
of years. Bro, so why don't you start by showing a sign of wisdom? Thanks for the call. That's all. Start by showing a sign of wisdom. The phone number here is 1-800-4. See, I like that guy's laugh because, look, we disagree on Bush, and we disagree on the Saudis, and blah, blah, blah. But at least at the end, he laughed. He didn't get angry, you know. And that's the important thing. As my father said in his, my father had a little sign in his tiny little store. And it said, "Don't go away, Mayor, just go away." That was the sign he had in the front of his stall in his little marketplace he was in. I said, "What does that mean, Dad?" He says, "When you get older, you'll understand it." I read it for years. There are many signs he had in the store that I didn't understand when I was 5, 6. I had no idea what they meant. But as I worked in the store every weekend, I worked in the basement, I would come up, I'd read the sign over. And I'll give you an example. When I was a kid, I saw a sign in every building I went into. And it said, "Occupancy by more than 200 people is dangerous and unlawful." I didn't know what occupancy meant. So I used to think it was a declarative statement such as Sieg Heil. Like, occupancy, like a declaration. By more than X, you know, 200 people is dangerous and unlawful. I had to find out what occupancy meant to understand that sign. There was another sign that he had on in his market on the way down the steps. It said, to the bathroom. I remember going to that tomb of a bathroom. And there was a sign on the wall that said, "We grow too soon old and too late smart." Well, needless to say, by the time I could figure it out, it was too late. 1-800-449-8255. Let's raise this question now on the Savage Nation. Am I right about Bush or am I wrong about Bush? Do you think Bush is right to go to the United Nations to a forum being led on religious tolerance by Saudi Arabia, a racist, intolerant nation? Who's right, me or the caller? That's all. There are many other calls you can call about. I'm going to have many other stories. There are some very good ones. U.S. to ship fuel to North Korea. Is that Bush's decision? What a great idea. What a swell idea. How about another one? The sonar, the Navy, and the whales. Huge story. Huge story coming up on the Savage Nation. And if you haven't read it or heard about it, it's up on michaelsavage.com along with many other important stories. We'll also have a reading today from my new book, the Psychological Nudity book, and there are now 1,200 copies left for you to buy. But hold on, I have good news for you. I ordered a second printing. If you want the first edition, first printing, there's 1,200 copies left. If you want the first edition, second printing, you'll have to wait a few weeks. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I regret saying some things I shouldn't have said.
Like
dead or alive, or bring them on. You know, I was trying to convey a message. I probably could have conveyed it more artfully. You know, being on this ship reminds me of when I went to the USS Abraham Lincoln, and they had a sign that said, "Mission accomplished." I regret.
8 years of Bush, and they're not over yet. And today we read that he's going to New York to salute Saudi Arabia, a nation that forbids the public practice of other religious faiths, but is astonishingly going to preside over a two-day UN conference on religious tolerance. Now, I would expect this kind of insult from the United Nations, but I wouldn't expect the United States president to go there. And so I say, imagine an animal rights forum in China. But, you know, I linked that article up with another one on my website, michaelsavage.com, from Commentary Magazine called The Big Saudi Swindle. It's an amazing article, but it goes together with what I'm trying to get across to you. They write that while Riyadh has doused jihadist threats to the kingdom, radical Islam continues to flourish in Saudi Arabia and is endorsed and exported in violent form by the ruling family. Read that article. Las Vegas, Jerry, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's your opinion?
Yeah, I just wanted to concur that the Saudis have been exporting the Wahhabi revival movement, which is promotes intolerance in religion. But the way I see it, somebody is trying to make a fool out of George Bush. I mean, if you can conceive of the most intolerant religious country in the world, it's Arabia. They only allow the practice of the Sunni sect of Islam, not even the Shiite sect. And the emir of Mecca is supposedly autonomous, but his salary is paid by the Saudi government. And there's virtually no religious practice of any other religion except behind, like, foreign compounds, the walls, you know, of foreign compounds, you know?
Yes, women in Saudi Arabia have no human rights. It is a racist nation. It is fundamentally a fascist nation. There's no argument. Any reasonable person on earth knows that it meets all definitions of fascism. Women have no rights, and other minority groups have no rights. And the fact of the matter is, I want to read the rest of this paragraph to you. While Riyadh has doused jihadist threats to the kingdom, radical Islam continues to flourish in Saudi Arabia and is endorsed and exported in violent form by the ruling family. Listen to this. Their commission to promote virtue and prevent vice. I meant Condoleezza Rice. I guess they like pasta. Their commission to promote virtue and prevent vice regularly carries out unspeakable punishments upon innocent Saudis who have run afoul of Wahhabist doctrine, prescribing gang rapes and the like as penalties for female immodesty. And the Saudis still fund anti-Western, anti-Semitic madrasas around the globe. Now, why would Bush and other world leaders convene for this farce in the United Nations? I will tell you why. Because the king of Saudi Arabia is using his billions to promote his image as a peacemaker around the world. And George Bush is being used as a prop in this public relations campaign by this fascist dictatorship. That's my opinion. Now, what is your opinion is the important thing. Because the people like your calls. Okay, so I'll take them from you at 1-800-449-8255. Mark, WOR New York, your opinion counts on the Savage Nation. What is it?
Hi, Dr. Savage. You're absolutely right about Bush being ridiculous for going there. I mean, why don't we bring up the 9/11? Simple hijackers came right out of there. They were taught there, supported from there, and came onto our soil to commit one of the biggest atrocities in the history of this country, and nothing was done about that to Saudi Arabia. They should at least pay for what they did to the towers and to the people and take it from there. But to go to visit them for some kind of faith tolerance party, what kind of nonsense?
No, I'm saying, but I want to ask you something. Did you hear about this story on any other show today?
No, not
did
yet.
Did you hear that Saudi Arabia, the country that forbids public practice of other faiths, is going to preside over a two-day UN conference on religious tolerance, and that Bush will be there? Did any other radio talk show host touch this today?
Not to my knowledge.
No, not to my knowledge either. Thank you for the call. So here's the next question of the day. Given that the media has become so supine that it's almost worthless, look up the word supine. It's not related to porcupine. S-U-P-I-N-E. Given that the electronic media has become totally supine, I'm going to ask you this question. Who in the electronic media, that's radio and television, will disappear within 1 year? Who in the electronic media has become redundant? Who in the electronic media have become the equivalent of the Edsel? Or shall I say, who in the electronic media have become the equivalent of Ford and General Motors and will disappear within 1 year unless they're bailed out by Hank Paulson? 1-800-449-8255, Chicago, Illinois. Jim, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Yes, Mike. I just wanted to hear your story about the electric blue saddle stitch pants, because when I was a kid, I had told my mother I was very much interested in getting these like green pants, and she said, okay, and she had to beg to get the money and everything, and she finally got the money, and I remember driving me to school, and she said to me right before I got out of the car, she said, be careful with those pants. And as soon as I got out of the car, I fell down and ripped a big hole in them. And
I can't believe it. So, in other words, I wasn't the only poor kid who saved up for a pair of pants that got ripped and then hid it from his mother and father for fear they'd freak out.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. Well, that's the opening story to my book. I think it's such a good title. It actually, I tossed around making that the title of the book originally, The Electric Blue Saddle Stitch Pants, but it sounded too much like a... I think it was a Robbins novel from the 70s, and I didn't want to make anyone to think I was a derivative, you know, a derivative of him, because truthfully, this book's an original. I'm going to send you a free copy of the book and read you a paragraph or two from The Electric Blue Saddle Stitch Pants. In the seventh grade, my mother bought me the most incredible pants. We didn't have a lot of money, but she knew I wanted these pants really bad. It was the Elvis era, you see. Mama saved and brought me a pair of electric blue saddle stitch pants. I wore them to school. I thought I was Elvis himself. On the very, very first day, a bigger, older kid just happened to be wearing the same pants. And naturally, we got in a scuffle. He pushed me down, and my gorgeous Elvis pants were ripped in the knee. I thought it was the end of the world, because these were the most expensive, beautiful pants I'd ever had in my life. So the rest of the day, I couldn't sit through the classes. Whatever the teacher said, my mind was somewhere else. My heart was pounding. How am I going to tell my mother? How am I going to tell my father? So I come home with the pants, hiding the rip under my coat. I said, Ma, I ripped my pants. She didn't get mad. She said, let me see them. Don't worry about it. I said, you're not going to tell Dad, are you? She said, no, don't worry about it. So all night long, I couldn't sleep. The next day, the women were talking it over, sitting around the little table in that little house in Queens, and they were moving the crumbs around with their bread knives and talking. They decided what to do. They took the pants to a certain tailor, and the word came back, don't worry, Michael, the pants can be weaved. Now, I didn't know what the pants can be weaved meant. I don't think they do that anymore because clothing has become something different than it was then. Today, we throw everything away. But I knew from that moment on that everything would be good, and it was. The pants were weaved. But that's what a mother's for, I guess, to fix everything but a broken heart. That's from Psychological Nudity. You can't go wrong reading that one to your child as a bedtime story. It was another era, it was another age, and let me tell you something. It was a great era and a great age. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. Send Jim a free copy of that book. He's holding on line two. Make sure I live up to my word with everybody who calls this show. There are great topics out there, and I'm going to take a few callers now. Elliot in Wisconsin, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Oh, yes. I just wanted to comment on the Bush attending the Saudi Arabia and Israel chit-chat thing. I think that Bush is probably just, like, plotting on America. I don't know, maybe passing a law, no freedom of religion, or, like, only Islam should be worshipped. Or I don't know, maybe he's, like, for us being invaded, who knows? It's so many different things that's just coming towards America right now. We're all scared. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen with Barack Obama coming on. We don't know what's going to happen with Bush leaving. We're just scared right now. We don't know. It's $700 billion in our debt. I'm scared.
Well, it's $700 billion that they're reporting, my friend. But we understand it's closer to $2 trillion that they're hiding, and they're not even disclosing who's getting the money. This is the greatest theft in world history going on right in front of our eyes, and the supine media is not reporting it, Elliot. The supine media that is supposed to be a watchdog is less than a lapdog. They are not even reporting on this. Instead, they're talking about body language and hugging and this and that. They have become worthless. That is why I say to you, talk radio now is more important than it has ever been, and all of you must understand this. It doesn't matter whether you agree with me 100% or 0%. What you have to understand is that when you lose voices of dissent in this country, you're going to lose the country itself. Do you understand that, Elliot? I know you do. I know you do.
Yeah, it's just, like I said,
thanks for calling. I really do mean that. Chicago, WIND. Bill, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Mike. I'm a cab driver in Chicago, and I just wanted to let you know that you motivate me every day to work an extra 3 hours. I usually feel like quitting about 4:30, but you're so right on so many subjects, and you mix it up with your stories. And it keeps me in the cab.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ask you to turn the radio on if Obama and his friends get in the cab, since you're in Chicago. Or what if some of the party hacks get in the cab? Do you ever play my show when some of the Democrat party hacks get in your cab? That must be fun.
I do. They tell me to turn it off.
Oh. Oh, you mean they heard of me?
Yes. Yes. They don't like listening to you. And
they don't like Well, you know what? They have a right not to listen to me. But you ought to remind them they don't have a right to let... to tell others they can't listen to me. Do they know the difference?
Well, I'm scared. I'm scared about what's going to happen.
What are you scared of? What do you think's going to happen? What's your worst fear?
The judges. The judges that Obama's going to put in for life. And it's just, you know, one judge in Connecticut now passed that...
Well, that's right. The homosexuals have been planting the courts with their plants for years now. They've taken over the schools. They've taken over the entertainment industry. They've taken over the media. The only thing left for them is to take over the Supreme Court. They're not quite there yet. You understand that, Bill?
Exactly. And I'm telling you, Mike, so many people that get in my cab don't have a clue about what's going on.
No, because of the supine media. Because of the supine media. You know, the most interesting factor of this election was the fact that Obama won, but the gays lost. They never expected it. It was a reversal of what they thought, that by bringing out all of these illegal voters through ACORN and other organizations that dug up the dead and registered people who were not entitled to vote, they thought that they would win on homosexual marriage, but they didn't understand that black people have their own opinions on this subject, and that 7 out of 10 black people said no to gay marriage. They were shocked by that. So it was a paradox for them, and quite ironic that the very people that they went and brought out to vote for the first time acted like free men instead of like slaves. They thought that they would checkmate, they would check right down the line, and they'd have their agenda. But the gay mafia lost in California, Arizona, and Florida. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, well, how come that's not in the newspaper? Because their friends run the newspapers. Now that's why they want talk radio eliminated. You understand that as well, Bill, don't you?
Mike, journalistic malpractice, that's what's going on.
My friend, name one story in psychological nudity that you cannot wait to read to your children or grandchildren, and you get a free copy.
There was a story you told about a hotel one time, and you gave a guy some money to hold.
Oh, the midget in the hotel.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good story. I'm going to send you a free copy for reminding me of the midget in the hotel in Florida. That's a great story. Okay, the phone number, 1-800-449-8255. Go to michaelsavage.com, look at the stories, and call me. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We're talking about all of the stories of the day here on the Savage Nation. I would say all the news of the day that you're not getting anywhere else, because I didn't see these stories anywhere else. Saudi Arabia to lead a UN faith forum. Unbelievable to me. Well, I have other stories for the next hour and the hour after that on the Savage Nation. But I'm thinking, you know, America needs a life raft right now, because we all fear the ship of state could go down. But what is that life raft? The reason my mind is on life rafts is because I just got one for my boat. You know, I've owned a 45-foot overall powerboat for 5 years. I've got many, many hundreds of hours on powerboats. I'm not a sailor. I have had sailboats, but I'm a powerboat guy. They're more convenient, and you can, you know, go where you want to go when you want to go. It's just it's your choice. That's all there is to it. So I have this boat, and I've had only a small, like, 50-pound, you know, raft you could throw overboard that'll hold only two people. And I always say to myself, what, are you crazy? Why don't you have, you know, something, you know, like bigger? What do you know? I keep saying to myself. So finally I went and did it after 5 years of no raft. I ordered a double-tubed offshore raft that holds eight people with everything in it. And it just arrived. I was told that I had the boatyard pick up the boat, and they just installed it and sent me pictures of it. I haven't even seen it yet. I don't know. I'm looking at it. You know, there's something so familiar about a vessel you've gotten so used to. But listen to this. It shows you what's in the offshore equipment pack. Now, I'm not going to read everything in there, but this is interesting to me. Now, imagine you're offshore in a yacht, and she goes down, and you pull a cord. You know, you open the container on top. It's all vacuum-packed, tied into a small container. You throw it overboard, and the cord, it's a rip cord, opens it up, and the thing goes whoosh. It inflates itself, and then you got to jump in somehow, swim in, blah, blah, blah. Now, you get in there. It's got all this stuff in there. It's got a roof on it. Listen to what's inside this package. Manual pump, repair kit, bailer bucket, two sponges, two paddles, signal mirror. Wait, listen. Whistle, flashlight, all of the stuff you'd expect. Orange smoke signal, drinking cup, retaining line. Wait, it's going to get better now. Water rations of 16 ounces of water per person. Anti-seasickness tablets. First aid kit, fishing kit, raft knife, utility knife, Bible. Survival manual. Wait, let me go over that. Raft knife, utility knife, Bible. Ooh, they put a Bible in a survival raft. Well, there's an old statement that there are no atheists in a foxhole. I wonder if it applies to there are no atheists in a survival raft. I'd like to be in a survival raft and see who the atheist who voted for Obama prays to. Survival manual, oral inflation tube. That should go over very well in San Francisco. Food rations of 1,000 calories a person, sunblock, nitrile gloves, water storage bag, manual pump, survival manual. I can't wait to get home. Of course, you don't get to use them unless you're about to die. So it's sort of an investment that you hope to God you never have to use. I mean, you know it's there somehow, right? Vacuum packing. Three-position canopy. It's like a child getting a train set. Single arch tube. Inflatable boarding ram. Interior assist ladder. Does it have a television with cable? No. Hemispherical sea anchor. Heaving line. 50-foot painter. You don't even know what a painter is unless you're a boater. Retro radar reflective segments. Cape Horn ballast system, aluminumized urethane valise, and so on. There it is. So it has a Bible in it. Would you ever expect that? Why would you want a Bible inside an offshore raft? Isn't it enough that Obama's president? I mean, with Obama as president, there's probably no likelihood that any boat will ever go down. Well, that is any boat owned by a Democrat or an atheist. I would think that maybe Republicans still need survival rafts. But I would think that with Saint Obama in office, there's no possibility that anyone who voted for him will ever have trouble on the water. In fact, as we well know, he's going to save not only America, but he's going to save the earth, save the whales, which is a topic for the next hour, by the way, which is about the whales. Now, I happen to like whales. They're very, very touching animals. And I give money to whale groups and elephant groups. But when it comes to national security, I will put my nation's national security ahead of the ease and comfort of whales. Today, the Supreme Court has sided with the U.S. Navy in a dispute over sonar use and whale safety, which is fabulous. Take a guess which Supreme Court whack jobs said that there's harm caused to the whales and the U.S. Navy has no right to use any testing testing of any sonar. That's right. Judge Ruth Bad Girl Ginsburg, former director of the legal counsel of the ACLU, put on, with the help from double pants Republicans like John McCain. You know that John McCain boasted that he approved of Ruth Bader Ginsburg back in 92 or so when Clinton appointed her? That's the kind of president that McCain wanted to be, a real compromiser. Judice Rader Ginsburg, joined a dissent with Justice David Souter, the man who was allegedly cruising in a park a few years back and was found disheveled at 5 in the morning, and that was quickly covered up. I guess that's why they want talk radio ended in America. You're not supposed to remember such things. Said that the whales would be harmed and the Navy has to stop. It just shows you which side they're on.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Asking for support to ask the Navy to please stop using active sonar where our beloved whales are swimming.
This is very important that the Navy stops their active sonar.
And these sonar vibrations, there's proof of damage to the whales.
I feel it's really important that we speak out against the travesty that the Navy is trying to do.
Yeah, the travesty, you commie. You filthy commie, you filthy red, yeah.
So today the Supreme Court did the right thing. It sided with the U.S. Navy in a dispute over sonar use and whale safety. It ruled today that the U.S. Navy's need to conduct realistic training with active sonar outweighs the concerns of so-called environmentalists who say that the sonar could damage marine life. Now, so-called environmentalists, most of whom are communists who hate America, had argued that the sonar harms whales. And unfortunately, a lower court fool sided with the so-called environmentalists, but the Supreme Court today said no, the Navy can go forward with exercises off the coast of Southern California and does not have to sharply limit sonar use. Chief Justice John Roberts began the opinion by quoting George Washington, where he said, "To be prepared for war is one of the most effectual means of preserving peace. God bless him." Roberts was joined in full by Justices Scalia, Kennedy, Thomas, and Samuel Alito. Those are the Americans on the court. Of course, the un-Americans on the court, led by the outright America-hating, I don't know how many words I can use for the ACLU that are not enough to describe who they are. They hate this country. They'd like to see the country disappear. They hate freedom of speech. They hate the military. And they put their plant on the Supreme Court through Bill Clinton. Her name is Judith Bader Ginsburg. Judith Bader Ginsburg joined in the dissent with the whack job, Justice David Souter, who lives with his mother, apparently. They said that the likely harm, they didn't say proven harm, but the likely harm that would be done to the whale indicates that the Navy should not conduct training exercises. That's the story that I'd like to talk about today on the Savage Nation, along with the first story of the day from the last hour. We still have people hanging on with that one, which is Saudi Arabia, the fascist, racist kingdom that forbids the public practice of other religious faiths, is actually presiding over a two-day UN conference on religious tolerance. But wait, it gets worse. George Bush is in attendance. Now imagine an animal rights forum in China. Imagine a homosexual rights forum in Iran. Can you imagine a woman's rights forum led by someone in Somalia? This is not satire. This is not South Park. This is not a mad comic. No, this is the United Nations and George Bush. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. We're talking about these and other stories of the day right here on the Savage Nation. Let's go to the callers, some of whom have been holding for quite a while. Houston, Texas. Renee, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Well, Dr. Savage, I'm calling to say sometimes it's real damn tough to listen to your show because, first off, you have this religious tolerance convention from, you know, led by a country that's religiously intolerant. And then we're trying to be destroyed, or you have Supreme Court justices trying to destroy us from the inside out by trying to ban sonar. As I was mentioning to the screener, you know, eventually they're going to try to ban missiles wherever birds fly, saying it causes a disturbance in egg formation.
No, I hear you, Renee. We have outright, they're not crazy. You got to understand, these are not people who are crazy. Judith Ginsburg is not crazy. Judith Ginsburg is an ACLU lawyer who hates the military and hates America's sovereignty. That's who Judith Ginsburg is, in my opinion. You agree with me on that?
Yes, I do agree with you.
Good. Well, from now on, we don't call her Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. We call her Judith Ginsburg. Does that work for you?
It works for me.
Thank you very much. Let's see if that will be banned next time. Judith Ginsburg. Let us see if that spreads throughout the marketplace of ideas. WOR, New York. Pete, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Glad to speak to you finally. I'll make it really brief. I remember on June 5th, 2004, I had my six-year-old daughter, Nicole, in the car with me, and I got the news about Ronald Reagan, and I got you on the radio, calling for everyone to put the headlights on. I'll be real brief about this. And I'm driving in daylight on Long Island going eastbound, and all the westbound traffic, everybody had the lights on. Everything you said about Ronald Reagan, I could not have said better. And I listened.
I want to ask you something. Is it dark in New York City right now?
No, it is. Yeah, it is.
Okay. Are you on the highway? Are you on a roadway?
No, I'm in the house right this minute.
Okay, because I want to do this, Pete. Hold on. I'm not going to hang up on you. I want everyone who is listening to Michael Savage in New York City on WOR to flash their headlights when I say three. I don't care if you're on which freeway or expressway or parkway or city street. I want you to see the power of the Savage Nation that Obama and Pelosi want to shut down. So here it goes. If you're driving and you're listening to this show, and I want to see the cab drivers do it, don't worry, the cops won't arrest you. When I say 1, 2, 3, flash your lights, I want to see how many of you see other listeners to the Savage Nation. And we could do this, by the way, anywhere in America where it's already dark. Are you ready? Here we go. 3, 2, 2,000, 1, 1,000. Flash your lights for Savage. Flash, flash, flash your lights for truth. Flash your lights for freedom of speech. Now go back, Pete. What's on your mind?
Well, and this is what it was. I do remember when Ronald Reagan took office and how I actually witnessed, you know, I was a young man when Carter was ruining the country. And I actually lived through everything getting better. And all the words you said about Ronald Reagan were the type of things that made me the American that I believe I am today. And I'm trying to raise children with that ideology. Now, this is the question I have for you. I want to see if you agree with me. It feels now kind of how it did when Gerald Ford was handing America over to Jimmy Carter. And he took it, and he made all these promises that all these left-wing loonies, and they said, let's give him a try, all this hope. And he ran America into the toilet, 11% unemployment. I can never forget. I couldn't get a job in my own town as a young man. So anyway, and it did turn around, and it did get better. So my question for you, and I know it's off your topic, but I've been dying to ask you this for years. Is history repeating itself? Could it happen? Could after Obama Nation run its course, can it turn around?
It depends upon how far we permit him to go. It depends upon how far we permit the left-wing agenda to be implanted. It depends upon how many judges he gets to appoint. It depends on many factors as to whether or not Obama will be a one-termer and whether or not we can save America after he is through despoiling it with the left-wing agenda that has been roundly condemned around the world, except in Cuba, North Korea, and other backward regions of the world. Pete, thanks for calling the Savage Nation. Will Obama be a one-term president? Well, the fact of the matter is the economy stinks. He's inherited a very bad economy. And he can only for so long say that he inherited a bad economy because, as you know, people have short memories. Do you actually think the economy will be better in 4 years? I do not. I actually think the economy will be much worse in 4 years because of the engorged progressive agenda of Obama and his minions. I also believe Obama is likely to grant amnesty to illegal aliens, which will be the most unpopular motion in American history. I also believe Obama and Pelosi and Feinstein and the other fascists will attempt to destroy free speech in America. And they will hear from 52 million Americans who will not permit them to get away with it. And it will go to the Supreme Court, and we will prevail in the Supreme Court. And Obama will look like what he is, which is a left-wing social worker and a college professor from Chicago. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Savage Nation, it's 21 minutes after the hour. In the last segment, I had said to the audience, actually first in New York, because, you know, it's later there, obviously, and then I realized it's kind of getting dark across the whole East Coast for sure, and it's darkening here on the West Coast as well, and I said, when I count to 3-1, flash your lights for Savage and flash your lights for Truth and let the liberals understand that we're an army out there and that 52 million of us are not going to roll over to the left-wing agenda as quickly as they might think, nor are we simply going to take it and go quietly into the night if the fascists like of Pelosi and the fascists like Feinstein want to kill free speech. So I'm going to take your calls right now. San Diego, Carol, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Hi, Michael. I was just listening to about turning on your lights, even though it's still, I'm sure on the West Coast, you know, the sun's starting to set.
Yeah.
I counted at least 10 people, but when I got on the freeway, it looked like about half of the population here in San Diego have their headlights on.
Well, come on, wait a minute. Hold it now, but let's not jump to conclusions. Were they flashing their lights, or were the lights just on?
The lights just turned on.
When I said 3-2-1, they all went on at once?
Well, yeah, I think a lot of them.
Okay, well, I don't even know how powerful this show really is. Carol, stay in the line. I'm sending you a copy of Psychological Nudity, but what I want to do, make sure we get Carol's address and we send it to the Fulfillment House. I want to play for you now a montage that was done by my wonderful team on the issue of the Inquisition that is about to come under Obama, Boxer, Feinstein, and Pelosi. Play it again, Sam.
In a time when the Church of the One proclaims itself the one true religion,
I am for the fairness doctrine,
heresy has taken hold.
Saying today that talk radio is running America, and we have to deal with that problem, is gangsterism.
The One sends the inquisitors of heretical depravity to exterminate the heresy.
Talk radio is overwhelmingly one way.
Unbelievers are hunted down, condemned, and burned.
Let us take the 85% of the media that is not dominated by conservatives.
No one is safe under the Inquisition.
What would you say about ABC, CBS, and NBC Evening News? Would you say that's over-dominated by liberalism?
Well, talk radio is one-sided. It also is dwelling in hyperbole. It's explosive.
Putz.
It pushes people to, I think, extreme
views. Yeah, but we don't
views.
Sell products
so
to China, you rat you.
Like
you.
Say,
you rat
in
you.
Country
you sell out you.
I remember when there was a fairness doctrine, and I think there was much more serious... Correct reporting.
Putz.
Correct.
Secret
you
files.
Communist witch, you.
Extraordinary revelations of village life under the Inquisition.
Well, I think we should all try to be fair and balanced, don't you?
That's Charles Schumer. Go ahead, play the music for Charlie Schumer. This is who Charlie's become, his worst nightmare. Charlie Schumer of Brooklyn, repeating the rhetoric of his friends from the Third Reich. The man he thought he was going to fight, he became. He is his worst enemy. The enemy is them. They're the enemy of freedom. That's who Charlie Schumer became. All the liberals who said that they were going to stand up to fascism have become their worst enemy. They don't even understand how blind they are. They have no idea who they are. But let me tell you something. 52 million of us know who they are. There was Dianne Feinstein, whose husband Blum has done business with China for so many years you can't even count them on both hands, having the audacity to use communist Chinese rhetoric in the United States Senate and say, well, when there was a fairness doctrine, there was much more correct speech on the radio. And you're going to define correct speech, you communist witch, you? I don't believe what I'm listening to. And you better wake up before you wake up to a fascist dictatorship in this country. Ray in Houston, Texas, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
It's an honor to speak to you, Mr. Savage. I just want to tell you that to me, you are America's grandfather. My grandfather's 77 years old. His mind's going, and I remember him telling me stories about working hard.
Wait a minute. Hey, are you trying to insult me? You said I'm America's grandfather, and I remind you of your grandfather whose mind's going?
No, no. You remind me of the stories, because that's how he, you know, I spent a lot of time in the summer, and he would tell me the stories of him and his father farming peanuts in the middle of East Texas.
No, I know. I know you mean it fondly. I'm just being sarcastic. Unfortunately, it's my middle name. It's a defense mechanism. You'll have to forgive me. Well, you know what? I could think of a worse moniker than America's grandfather. What do you think's going to happen when the fascists like Dianne Feinstein and Obama come after America's grandfather?
I think we're all going to have to become America's grandfather. I mean, I got two sons. I got a 4-year-old and 11-year-old. I'm going to have to be their grandfather because they're going to take it from us. We're going to have
No, they're not going to take it from you. If you had any idea what power 52 million people have in this country, you'd be amazed at how we could make these mice run back down into the holes they came out of. These people are like evil mice gnawing at the fabric of the American flag. These people are like mice running up the Statue of Liberty's dress, and we cannot permit them to win. My friend Ray, I'm sending you one copy of Psychological Nudity so you have these stories. Is your grandpa still alive?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Okay, I want you to read him a couple of those stories. Which story in particular would you read to grandpa?
Honestly, Dead Man's Pants, of course, but I really like the one about the neighbor who was gambling and came by looking for money because my grandfather would have given his money to him.
Oh, the neighbor who was he was a hotel clerk who was involved in the woman business.
Right.
And then he was a gambler who needed money, and he came around and dad gave him money because he was a friend, and you don't ask a friend why he needs the money. You just reach in your pocket and you give him whatever you have. That's what you're talking about. You know, but that was another time in America, Ray. That was a different time in America. I don't know that this exists anymore. I think it's everyone out for himself. It's, you know, every man for himself today. And I think that's how these left-wing fascists can get away with this kind of rhetoric without people booing them out of business. How could they get away with saying that when I was in, when there was a fairness doctrine, things were more politically, speech was more correct? How could she say that without understanding she's repeating communist dialectic?
They've isolated us with the television. That's how, because we don't talk to each other.
Stay on the line. You're getting a free copy of the book. Sam in New York, quickly. We have 20 seconds, Sam, on WOR. What are you seeing on the road, Sam?
Savage,
this is in reference to the flashlights. I'm currently on the parkway going to New Jersey. And, man, you got a lot of power there here in New Jersey, New York.
Yeah, well, tell it to Charlie Schumer. And tell him to go back to Russia where he came from.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation UN Faith Forum run by Saudi Arabia? How about an animal rights forum run by the Chinese Communists? Navy allowed to use their submarines, irrespective of what Judas Bader Ginsburg says about them. Supreme Court again ruling intelligently. There are other topics. I've asked one that you didn't answer yet, which is, who in the electronic media do you think will disappear within 1 year? And the reason I ask that is because they have become supine, largely, and worthless, talking about nothing. The election is over. They don't understand it. You're not interested anymore in the election. So I'm asking you, for example, who brought up these topics today but me? Nobody. I challenge you to tell me if one national host talked about the UN Faith Forum, the Navy sonar whale story, U.S. shipping fuel to North Korea, and all the other important stories, such as Dianne Feinstein talking about correct speech under a fairness doctrine. Nobody. That's why I'm so important. That's why I'm the lightning rod. That is why I am the most important man in the media today. And that's why I'm asking you, who in the electronic media is so unimportant that they will disappear within 1 year? And I'm not talking about the fairness doctrine. Houston, Texas. Mike, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. It's an honor to talk with you. I've got something that disturbed me a little bit. I live in Harris County, which since the beginning of time has voted Republican or conservative. And for the first time, not I, but Harris County voted liberal. And
Hold on. I can tell you. You want me to guess why that happened?
Please.
You can probably tell me if I'm right or wrong. Did you get a large influx of refugees from Hurricane Katrina in your county?
Absolutely.
Well, does that answer your question?
Well, not only that, but you just wanted us to flash lights. So I flashed my lights, I looked around, and I just happened to be going by the Galleria on 610 Loop, which is one of the heaviest traveled roads in rush hour in Houston. And I only saw a few lights flash, and I was really kind of surprised.
Well, you see, we got lots of lights in San Diego, lots of them in New York City, but no longer in your county because your county has been invaded by the body snatchers.
Absolutely, and I started looking at the trucks, mostly trucks.
Wait, let me ask you something. I mean, I know, see, I'm the only one in the media who understands why regions of Texas have been flooded with liberals, and that was because of the influx of refugees from the Hurricane Katrina. Why have they not been repatriated to Louisiana?
That is a very good question.
I guess they like it there. Huh? You got a lot of welfare over there?
Well, the problem is that I think what they like is the cheap labor is what I think they like.
Oh. All right, my friend. Thanks for calling the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to my hometown station, KNEW San Francisco. Actually, I gave it a new name today. Remember the ex-Soviet Union had a hammer and a sickle on its flag? The sickle was known as a scythe. Since San Francisco is the closest thing to a communist city in the United States of America, we're going to also fondly refer to that city as San Fran Scytho. Jack, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Michael, on your boat's SOS emergency kit there, do you have a backup portable handheld marine FM radio?
Or do you in the kit? I don't know.
Well, see, first thing that happens if you have an electrical fire or, God forbid, your boat starts sinking and your battery's short out, you're going to lose all your electricity, so your nice hardwired FM marine radio doesn't work. So you want to get yourself a little $200 waterproof handheld.
Well, I actually have a handheld battery-powered rechargeable one that I keep at home to listen to the weather band when I'm home before I go down to the dock, you know, which is 2 miles away, to see what the weather is. But no, I should carry that one on the boat is what you're saying anyway.
Yeah, because first thing happens, you have electrical fire or you start sinking and your battery's short. Your nice hardwired FM radio dies. Also have a little handheld, just a little $100 handheld port GPS with it. because your GPS chart.
I think that these are included, but I'm not sure in the package. I'll have to check. This is a very expensive offshore raft that I bought from a company that makes them in Florida. To be honest with you, I never opened it because they're vacuum sealed when you get them. You understand what I'm saying?
Righto.
What I'm worried about is that when you need it, what if it's not in there?
Yeah, so just keep by your helm, keep like a Ziploc baggie and have a little portable handheld GPS and a portable FM radio. And then the other thing you want to have is an EPIRB on your boat.
Yes, I think they come in it. This is an offshore or a coastal life raft family. I know it's a double-hulled, two buoyancy tubes, which is the most important part of it. You know that as well, Jack, right?
Yeah, and they have to be serviced every couple of years, too.
Yes, they have to be serviced. Let's see what the radio is in there. Extend, metal, manual pump, repair kit, sponges, compass, drinking cup, Bible. Were you surprised that they include a Bible in the offshore survival kit?
It's good. It might keep you from cannibalizing your friends.
Well, you know, it's a good point because the only one who's liable to be in that tube with me is my dog, Teddy.
Oh, you can't do that.
No, I don't think I would eat Teddy. I think I'd let him eat me first.
There you go.
Wait a minute, hold it. Here it is. EPIRB when available. What does that mean, when available? What does that mean, when available? It's supposed to be in there. Flashlight is in there. But the batteries will be dead in 2 years, probably.
Yeah, well, EPIRB's expensive. They're, you know, like cheap ones like $700. But
look what this says. Ultima Wrap Vacuum Packing. I got the vacuum packing, which means it's pre-packed. It's vacuum-packed, the offshore raft. So how do you know if everything's in there until you need it? What if it isn't? Who are you going to sue when you're dead? You know, I'm one of these guys who's very, very cynical and skeptical, and I don't trust too many merchants. Why do I take this company on faith that what I ordered for all this money is actually going to be in there if I ever need it? Why should I believe them?
Well, you climb into the raft, and there's a little note, you got punked.
You climb in the raft and it says, we screwed you. We gave you the single hull and there's nothing else in here. Good luck, sucker. And by the time you realize that, the boat's going down.
Exactly.
Hey, Jack, let me send you a copy of Psychological Nudity because you're such a good sport. I appreciate you calling the program. Oh, boy, that's funny. In case you just tuned in, I said earlier, America needs a life raft now that we have such an inexperienced captain about to take over the helm and such a as I see it, unfaithful crew. I don't know how else to put it. We have the equivalent of a faithless crew and an inexperienced captain about to take the helm of the ship of state, in my opinion. I'd like a life raft. The problem is there are no life rafts. The only life raft we have is the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights, which they're going to try and destroy as sure as I'm sitting here. You know, The Constitution and the Bill of Rights were the life rafts that were written by the Founding Fathers specifically for the day that an Obama would arrive on the scene. I know you may find that harsh, but I don't think that's harsh enough compared with what this man's background and rhetoric indicate he might do were he not constrained by these rules established long before he was on the scene here in the United States of America. You heard me. We do have a life raft. We have a life raft against tyranny. It is called the Bill of Rights in the U.S. Constitution. The question is, will we force our government, these activists, these left-wingers, these Marxists, to adhere to the tenets of the U.S. Constitution? The answer is you had better, or your children's life will be much dimmer than is yours. Christina, San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Hi, Savage. I am a loyal listener and one of your Savage Army soldiers. And my question for you is, what coordinated action plan do you want us to do and what can we do to fight this? Because I, as a young conservative, feel completely helpless.
Well, shall I say the word Queen of Diamonds and then you'll go out hunting for somebody? I'm not like that.
No. I just need to know, what can we do? I feel like
Now there's nothing you have to do. We only have to act when they try to take away some of our fundamental rights. And that will be the time that people like myself in talk radio tell you what you can do and what you must do. And that ranges all the way from the email to the street protest. Because if the gays think that 400 or 1,000 people are a lot, and it's going to intimidate the voters of the state of California who voted against homosexual marriage, I could bring out 10,000 people any day that I wanted in this Bay Area. You know that.
Absolutely.
And when I was a local host on a single station, I brought out 5,000 people in front of the Federal Plaza when they tried to steal, when they tried to impose affirmative action on us. If you remember Prop 209, you probably weren't around at that time. Well, shortly thereafter, we saved Prop 209. Shortly thereafter, the left-wing judge who tried to steal it from us, Felton Henderson, a few weeks later was resigned or retired. He had served his usefulness. His usefulness was over to the Marxists who were running the federal courts here in the state of California. The fact of the matter is we have an army of millions of people. My army is 8 to 10 million at least. If you add up the army that listens to Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Michael Savage, I would put a few others in the top five, but I don't have to mention them. The number is approximately 50 million people. Surely that is enough people to stop the left-wing agenda here and there. We're not going to win on every fight. We're not going to win every fight, Christina, but we're certainly going to win some of them. I can guarantee it.
All right, well, we'll be waiting. Thank you, Savage.
Chris, no, hold it now. I'm giving you a gift. Name one story, you get the book. Name the story.
I can't think of any in particular, but I love all of your stories with Teddy, especially.
All right, I'll give it to you because you were going to say The Nympho in Alley Pond Park. Stay on the line. We'll send you the free book. There's not one dirty word in the whole book, by the way. There's not one F word. See, I'm not Chris Rock. I'm not the degenerate who runs HBO. I'm not the sicko who creates Showtime. I'm not the degenerates who make the movies. I don't need to use dirty words. I don't need to use filth to entertain my audience and to sell a book. Trust me, neither do you. Bonnie in Hawaii, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, aloha, Michael. How are you?
Aloha.
I never noticed people with their lights on during the daytime, but about 25% of the cars going eastbound on H1 all had their lights on.
You're kidding me. Even in my old city of Hawaii, the welfare state of Hawaii, huh?
Yep. They
Bonnie,
love
hold
you
on.
Here.
We're gonna do it again. I'm going to do it once more, and let's say Hawaii only. Is the H1 freeway pretty busy right now?
No, it's a good time. We left Hickam, and we're going westbound to Waianae. It's only 10 to 3, so we did really good traffic.
Oh, yeah, you're 2 hours earlier, so that won't work. Bonnie, thanks for calling the Savage Nation. I could use a week in Hawaii right now. Unfortunately, all of my audience is clamoring for the Paul Revere of his time, Michael Savage, to sit here in the hot seat and play contact sports with you, the contact sports of ideas. And I'll return to do just that right here on the Savage Nation at 1-800-449-8255 or visit me online at michaelsavage.com.
Savage.
It is none other than the Savage Nation, which is the Paul Revere of the nation in many ways. There are other Paul Reveres riding smaller ponies, I would say. Let's go to the callers on the program. New York City, WOR. Avi, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Michael. I find it a little bit peculiar that you choose to live in, like, the liberal capital of the country. I'm a big fan of yours. Don't get me wrong, but I find it strange that you live in a liberal capital where it's flooded.
Well, let me explain it to you. Let me start with the literary reference. Voltaire, the famous French author, lived in Paris, and he wrote about the foibles of the Parisians, and consequently he became one of the greatest literary stars of all time because there was no end to the foibles of the Parisians of his time. So in that context, I'm in good company. But on a more pragmatic note, I'm not considering myself Voltaire because I'm still living and he's just a piece of marble in a museum. In that context, you can understand what I'm saying. I talk about the foibles of liberalism in a way that I could not do if I did not live around them. Doesn't that make sense?
It does, but at the same time...
Well, let me go to the next step. I first moved to San Francisco in 1974 when it was a truly liberal city as opposed to a fascist left-wing dictatorship, which is what has become. There were very nice people here who were liberal. There were gay people here who were not fanatics. It was a lovely city to live in. The whole city has changed and become a left-wing fascist dictatorship where the police are now ruled by psychopaths whose hats don't even fit them. I don't want to go down the whole list of things. In other words, when I moved here, the city was lovely politically and in every other way. I bought property here. I have family here. We have a business here. I have a radio station here. That's not easy to throw away, Avi.
Michael, but you'd be more comfortable if you lived in a place among people they'd feel more comfortable with.
First of all, that's esoterically possible. Where is that place?
Somewhere, I don't know, Florida? I don't know.
See, now you're saying, you know what you just said? I don't know. You're telling me South Florida, the land of the dangling ballot? The land of the Obama maniacs? The land of the lock-seating Obama maniacs is a place I would be comfortable in? Are you crazy?
No, there are parts of Florida that are fine. Texas. Texas has a lot of normal, good people, good health.
I understand that, but didn't you hear the caller from Texas just now who said for the first time in its history, a county he lives in voted for Obama, and I was the only one in the media who knew why, which is because the people who were refugees from New Orleans never left?
I know Austin's a crazy place. I know a lot of parts of it, but you have, I'm saying...
Let me put it this way, Avi. I'm not arguing with you just for the sake of argument. I've had the same discussion with myself and family for years. But at a certain point in your life, it's not that desirable to leave a community, even if they're all left-wing wackos. I still live in a free country where I can be who I am and think what I am, and they can go you-know-where if they don't like it. I don't really care what they think of me. You understand that, Avi? I could care less if their children don't like me. I could care less if the neighbors walked by me with their noses in the air, because their noses have been up there you-know-whats for so long, they don't even know that they have a nose. What do I care what people think of me?
Dad, I don't. But my problem is not with that. My problem is for you that you feel more comfortable.
I'll be comfortable. You know where I'll be comfortable? In the next world, I'll be comfortable.
Okay, I hope so. Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, look, Avi, there's no comfortable in this world. Let me put it to you that way. Are you comfortable where you live?
Relatively, yeah. Even though I live in the pretty bad area, but. I've lived in Far Rockaway. It's not the best.
I know, but what you're looking for, Avi, does not exist. You are looking for a patriotic community in America that has all of the amenities of the city that I have come to love. I do not know of a major city with the amenities that I have come to love and respect that is not psychopathically to the left of center.
Let me
put it to you another way. There are pockets of sanity even within a liberal desert. So, for example, when I go to San Francisco, I don't go to generic areas of San Francisco. I go to a specific area of San Francisco. I tend to congregate only in the North Beach area of San Francisco. Is North Beach conservative? No. But comparatively, there are strains of conservatism in it. There are older Italian people who understand what America was once like. I tend to hang out in places where the people are a little more patriotic than in some of the more limp-wristed areas of the city, if you get the meaning.
Trust me, I get the meaning. I live in New York. I would not step foot in Manhattan if I could help it. I never go there. It makes me sick.
Well, I would step foot in Manhattan, but there are places you can go even in Manhattan where you're going to find like-minded people. Do you think that everybody in Manhattan is an Obama worshipper?
No, but it's too crazy when you see all those people.
What you have to do is you have to focus on the smaller elements within the bigger city. Where you join groups, you join organizations, or you go to restaurants or clubs, whatever, where the people think the way you do, Avi. It sounds to me like you're very alienated from where you live.
I'm very comfortable with my community, but I just think for you that I'm saying...
Oh, I'm very uncomfortable with my community. I'm extremely disconnected from it. I'm extremely disconnected from the entire state of California. I call it the late, great state of California. It is a destroyed cesspool. However, there are pockets of fantastic areas in the state. It is also physically the most beautiful place on earth, even though Arnold Schwarzenegger is the worst governor in history, precisely because he faked it and pretended to be what the last governor was, and he's even worse than the last governor. And because the psychos and the fascists have taken over the media does not mean there aren't millions of like-minded people out here, Avi.
I totally agree with you.
I stay within my own world. Avi, I'm actually very self-contained. And I also have a real secret weapon. You know what that is?
What?
It's this show, The Savage Nation. I go to this community every day where millions await me.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Since the election, how you doing?
Well, I've been sleeping like a baby.
Yeah.
Sleep 2 hours, wake up and cry. Sleep 2 hours, wake up and cry.
We're just asking for support to ask the Navy to please stop using active sonar where our beloved whales are swimming.
This is very important that the Navy stops their active sonar.
And these sonar vibrations, there's proof of damage to the whales.
I feel it's really important that we speak out against the travesty that the Navy is trying to do.
You know, I'll probably get back and take a deep breath, and I haven't had much time to really settle down and figure what life's going to be like after this. I know I'm going to be in Texas. No doubt I'm heading straight home. I miss Texas. I love Texas. I've got a lot of friends in Texas. I will probably write a book. I am going to, you know, I know I'm going to build a policy institute and a library at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas.
Ooh. Wow.
Other than that, nuclear. I'm just not quite sure yet.
I wonder if it'll contain these sound bites that we've all come to love, nuclear and things of that nature. Anyway, the stories we were talking about in the show are all found up on my website, michaelsavage.com. The biggest story of the day to me is that Saudi Arabia, the fascist dictatorship of Saudi Arabia that forbids the public practice of other religious faiths, is actually presiding as we speak over a 2-day UN conference on religious tolerance. Now, such things do occur at the UN, but rarely has an American president been such a vassal of the UN or such a vassal of Saudi Arabia that he would attend a travesty of this nature. The other topic is a positive topic. The Supreme Court today ruled in favor of the Navy to continue to use sonar on their submarines in California, despite the quislings and despite the left-wing justices on the Supreme Court, such as Judith Bader Ginsburg and David Souter, an old man who lives with his mother, if you get the drift. Court rules for Navy in dispute over sonar in whales. Another top story on the Savage website. Catholic bishops will fight Obama on abortion. Hey, thank God. Thank God the church is going to stand up for what it believes in. I'll believe it when I see it. Foley breaks silence on sex scandal. Now, this is a story that you won't believe. Hard times, but big Wall Street bonuses. Did you hear about this one? Even though there's hard times, the very gangsters who busted out Wall Street are taking home hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars in bonuses, and your government is aiding and abetting them. That's Bush's last days of power. The big Saudi swindle. Groups push for pathway to legalization under Obama. Those would be the illegal aliens amongst us. Muslim killed Catholic girl in love with a roommate. This is from England. Muslim killed Catholic girl in love with a roommate. A teenager was brutally murdered by her boyfriend's Muslim roommate because he did not approve of him going out with a Catholic. It's an extremely tolerant mindset, I want you to understand. Let us see what else we have for you on the Savage Nation. Fears rise that Democrats will assault Second Amendment rights. That is up on the website, michaelsavage.com. I've asked several questions. I've got some of the answers. Again, I invite you to go to michaelsavage.com. I have a wonderful interview coming up that I did earlier today on the Savage Nation that I know you're not going to want to miss. I asked the question, will Obama be a one-term president earlier? And I said, unless, you know, they pass some kind of weird laws, I believe yes. And for starters, there's a strong chance the economy will still be terrible in 4 years. In fact, it'll probably be much worse. And I think that the people will think they don't care that he inherited a bad economy. All they're going to do is say, he's the president. We want change right now. I pray to God that the Republicans don't do it again and run either Sarah Palin or Bobby Jindal. I pray to God that they run Mitt Romney. Not that he's a great conservative, but he's certainly a much better choice than either Jindal or Palin for many different reasons, which I'm not going to discuss right now. It's too soon for me to get involved in that. We also don't know what's coming in terms of domestic or international terrorism and how Obama handles that one. So the question remains of whether he will be reelected or not, and I think it's almost a foolish question in that he hasn't even become president yet. Sandy in Virginia Beach, I can't take your call right now. Let's go to Las Vegas. Nick, welcome to the Savage Nation. Nick, topic, please.
Michael, as a fiscal conservative, business-owning musician, working musician in Las Vegas, I want to respectfully ask you to decline from referring to your listenership as an army, because I think it's antagonistic and it's too soon for that.
Well, it's an interesting point, but you may be wrong. Maybe if they understood there was an army of millions of people, they'd be a little less likely to try to roll us over.
I think they know that, but let me tell you, as
a... Wait a minute. I don't think they know that. I think that they live in denial. If you have a Dianne Feinstein who gets up there and has the nerve to say that when there was a fairness doctrine, speech was more correct on in the media, doesn't that alarm you to hear the word speech was more correct? Here's a woman who's thinking and acting just like a communist Chinese dictator.
She knows you're there. She knows you're there. She knows you're here, I guess I should say. But from a personal
standpoint. All right, I understand. Well, let me throw something out, Nick, that no one has mentioned yet in the United States of America. This is original, as usual, to the Savage Nation. They want to pass the fairness doctrine, okay? Is that also going to apply to NPR?
Of course not.
Well, what do you mean, of course not? It will. I'll make it. My army will make it apply. If I have to bring a million people outside every federal courthouse in America, if I have to bring 100,000 people outside NPR broadcast studios, we're going to make it apply to them. They want a fairness doctrine? Let them start with the left-wing NPR. Let them put some conservatives on there. Let's see how far their big mouths go then. They want a fairness doctrine? What's good for the goose is good for the gander. I said it first. Let them start with NPR. NPR is a left-wing mouthpiece. It's a left-wing organ. That's all it is. And the only thing that could stop these fascists like Feinstein and Pelosi and Boxer and Schumer, all of whom should know better, the only thing that will stop them are 52 million people in the streets of America. No, my friend, I disagree with you. An army it is, and an army it will be. An army of honest, peace-loving Americans. I'll be right back. Savage. You know, America has, I'm sorry to tell you, a love affair with stories about organized crime. Recently, I've been reading a series in the L.A. Times about organized crime's attempt to move into L.A. in the 50s and the incredible police squad that was formed to stop it. These were tough guys. They were all ex-military. The leader of them was the toughest guy, that is the police, a former B-25 pilot. It's fascinating to see what happened and how they kept the mafia, by and large, out of L.A. What a series. Joining us today is Paul Lieberman, who wrote these stories for the L.A. Times. Mr. Lieberman, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today.
How did you become involved with this kind of story?
Well, I was a longtime editor and roving cultural correspondent for the Los Angeles Times, but I also did these way outside the box special projects that took me into murky netherworlds, and this was one in a series of them where I got lost in some far off realm of cops and crooks and moral craziness.
What made you decide to do such an extensive story about the Los Angeles gangster scene?
Well, number one, anything called the gangster squad, I want to know about it. This fell into my lap in a way, and part of
sometimes inspiration is knowing when you leap at something. I was sitting around. We had published a story about history of the Los Angeles Police Department or certain aspects of it. And I'm sitting there, and I get a phone call. This is 1992. Okay, this is a long time. Some of your listeners probably were still in grade school then. 1992, I get a call, older man. He says, you left something out? What do you mean we left something out? You didn't mention the gangster squad. This had been talking about certain areas of the LAPD. I said, the gangster squad, how do you know about that? And he paused and said, well, I was on it. Well, I'd never heard of a gangster squad, much less a guy calling me in saying he was on it. And I basically said, what are you doing tomorrow afternoon? I'll be in your house. And the next day I was in the living room, or then a couple of days later, of this long retired LAPD sergeant, Jack O'Mara, who had been part of the original eight members of this squad formed right after World War II. I mean, all these guys were classic children of the Depression. They all fought in the war. They came back to the LAPD where they'd been before. And they got recruited to this very secretive squad, almost like Mission Impossible. You do not exist. If you get caught, you're on your own. That was formed to basically scare these mobsters out of town, do anything it took. I mean, it was one of these times where Los Angeles had never had success going through sort of following the rules and going through the channels. The first 50 years of the 20th century, when they eventually tallied every single mob killing, they had gotten a conviction in one of them, and that conviction had fallen apart. They got the wrong guy. So they'd gone 50 years without ever having a conviction in a mob killing, and they were just infuriated by these mobsters who kind of came from Chicago, New York, Cleveland, and made themselves at home in L.A., and they had recruited this fellow, Jack O'Mara, and some other very tough and clever cops for this thankless, secretive job of giving the hoods back some terror, giving them their own medicine, and drive them out of town, do whatever it takes, and that's the story. And after I had spoken to O'Mara over the following years, I tracked down nine other members of this squad, including all the surviving originals. One, the original bug man on the unit, would not talk to me for 10 years. And then one day he started answering questions, too. And later on, I also made contact with some associates of Mickey Cohen, who was the main hoodlum in the story, the main target. And then there was one of Mickey's rivals was a fellow named Jack the Enforcer Whalen, kind of a one-man Irish gang. I guess it's not politically correct today to define people by ethnicities, but the gangs were defined by ethnicities. And Whalen kind of was a rival of Mickey Cohen, and in a shooting in the last days of the 1950s, literally ending an era, he went into a restaurant to confront Mickey and was shot between the eyes. That's kind of the culmination of many, many years of attempts by the gangster squad to nail Mickey Cohen, and it all comes to a head with the shooting. Anyway, I also found relatives of his who were willing to talk about his side of things. So that really was it, basically lining up the cast of characters, and then you have them tell their stories, and then you go, and I got thousands of pages of documents, because you never know when someone tells a story. It may be a great story. Is it true? And you try to check that out by getting other witnesses to attest to it, and get every single document you could get your hands on, probation reports, death certificates, grand jury testimony, and after 50, 60 years, you have to dig these things out of very dusty, musty, murky archives and hope you can get some. But I found war letters written by some of these characters. I found handwritten letters by a mobster and his family to a judge, family pictures, and, you know, then you throw it all up in the air and hope it lands in one cohesive story and share it with your audience.
You describe the relationships not just with the gangster squad, but the gangsters themselves as being very convoluted as well.
Well, I mean, they fight each other for control of lucrative rackets. And in earlier eras, they fought over, in L.A., for instance, they fought over fruit carts. I mean, we're talking about the turn of the century. And then they fought over liquor. I mean, prohibition, there was huge dollars. And, you know, we know what happened in Chicago, right? The fights over control of the liquor trades. Well, the same thing happened in Los Angeles, and that was the next phase of things. And then finally, the illegal gambling came in, the bookmaking, the racing wire services, and control of that became another reason to fight. And you had these crews, as I said, you had the traditional Italian mafia, led by a guy named Jack Dragna. You had Mickey Cohen, who was a former boxer, and he was had met the Capones when he lived and boxed out of the Midwest. But he was originally born in Brooklyn, and he'd spent some time in L.A. And he was an associate of Bugsy Siegel. He came to L.A. as Bugsy's kind of gopher and muscle man and then worked his way up. And when Bugsy was murdered, while reading the Los Angeles Times, by the way, Mickey became the chief rival of Jack Dragna for control of the rackets in Los Angeles. But Mickey, interestingly enough, was, I mean, say that dumb hoodlum, I say dumb in a certain sense, most hoodlums and crooks are dumb, of course, but he was stupid in the sense that many of the gangsters in history have had at least enough brains to know you don't wave for attention. You don't say, looky, looky, here I am, here's what I'm doing. You don't parade around. I mean, you may parade around, but you don't invite the columnists and the gossip people and the Hollywood people to dine with you all over the Sunset Strip. Well, Al Capone did that a little bit. He loved being the public personality. More recently, in our times, John Gotti was that way, right? He loved the Dapper Don business and getting the attention and wearing the clothes. Well, Mickey Cohen in L.A. was that in spades. He would ride around with his, they called him the Seven Dwarves, were his crew, and they'd ride in this caravan of Cadillacs, and every night they'd be out on the Sunset Strip. So he waved for attention, and he became the sort of target of the gangster squad. I mean, Mickey so flaunted what he did, and not only was that stupid, but Mickey would taunt the police. I mean, he called this squad the Stupidity Squad. He called the police chief of Los Angeles, who became one of the famous figures in law enforcement, Chief Parker, called him a degenerate. Then the head of this unit in the 50s was a fellow who went on to be head of security for the NFL, Captain Hamilton. He called him a degenerate, too. I mean, you don't go out in public and call the guys who control an army that can come get you. You don't call them degenerates in public. But he did, so the war was on.
Well, this is a fascinating story. I'll play part two of my interview with Paul Lieberman of the LA Times tomorrow. You know, we all know Hollywood once made patriotic movies, but for the last generation, liberalism has been job one for the movie industry. Nobody knows this better than Robert Davi. He's been a conservative in Hollywood for 20 years. He's played numerous roles and has now written and directed a movie called The Dukes. Robert Davi, welcome to the Savage Nation. Hey, what's the life of a Hollywood conservative like? Where do you hide?
Well, it's first I'd like to say it's a pleasure being on the show, Mr. Savage. The life of a Hollywood conservative, I guess, is best summed up in it could be difficult. With the minority out there, and there's a silent group of us that come out, but basically there's a lot of liberals, and you can be marginalized at certain times. Try to do right now in terms of how it's approaching this current perestroika aspect of us. I find that I like to communicate to people, and a lot of the times my liberal friends don't want to discuss the issues. And that's a frustrating aspect of the whole thing. Also, even in terms of, I just directed my new film, The Dukes, there are some reviewers who are terrific, absolutely open, and give a tremendous response. And some, they marginalize you, and they say McCain shill, or they'll put up a supporter of the Iraqi war, and they'll put your politics inside the something that shouldn't have it in terms of when you're dealing with an art form.
What effect do you think an Obama presidency will have on Hollywood? Will it go further left?
You know, Michael, the I remember listening to the first speech he gave, I guess, at the DNC 4 years ago, with the no red states, no blue states, the United States, and then subsequently this last, on the night of the election, the victory speech. There seemed to be this feeling of perestroika, and community coming together, which I think is absolutely necessary for the country. Both sides are accountable. Both sides have amazing things to kind of account to the American people for. And I think the Hollywood contingency right now, there is a love affair with the cult of personality of Barack Obama. There's no mistake in the tremendous moment that this country has risen to or gone through right now in terms of electing our first black president. That's an emotional moment. You can feel that in the pride for America. But still, it seems to be an embracing of the left-wing aspect of the Democratic Party. Now, it remains to be seen if he's going to open from the middle, and I don't know if a lot of the people in our community want him to do that, the MoveOn.org contingency. I think we have to have an open discourse and enough of the fear of being able to speak out and say what you feel, and also the accountability. I think we have to have the absolute accountability to the politician, no matter what the party.
Is it true you were once racially profiled as an Italian-American?
Yes. You know, first off, Michael, I've been racially profiled my whole life. I look like a tough guy. And people used to just say, because you're Italian, they would say to me, hey, smilingly, but you're a mafioso. How are you part of the mob? You got some relatives in the mob? And, you know, look, I went to Catholic high schools, and my family didn't have that past. And it never bothered me. I just said, no, that's not true or anything. So in the mid-90s, Kathy Moriarty and I were trying to get a project going on, a lovely, lovely piece, like a modern-day Marty, that Patty Chayefsky thing, but it was a modern-day piece. And a gentleman had kept at a place in Beverly Hills called Cafe Roma, kept wanting to talk to me and meet me. There was something about the guy's vibe that I didn't like. So finally, after a year of him approaching me, he said, hey, you know, a friend of mine is coming out from Boston, and he's going to start a new film company, and he just worked with a couple of guys, Griffin Dunn and Danny Aiello over there in Massachusetts. I said, oh, really? He says, yeah. Well, I'll meet the guy. So I met the guy at Cafe Roma. I then introduced him later on. The producer and director talked to him. A year and a half later, I get a call at home. My wife calls me and said, two men came to the door. They want to talk to you. About what? They wouldn't say. You've got to call this number. So I called the DA's office, I guess. I called them. I said, what can I do for you? They says, well, we'd like to talk to you. I says, about what? And they didn't tell me what. And I said, well, come to the set. Here I am. They came to the set and extended a hand and gave me a notice to appear before the grand jury. I kind of thought it was odd, and I said, what's it about? He says, well, they couldn't tell me. They says, you just have to show up. They've got a car for me to take me to the DA's office. They were very nice, where they were having the grand jury, not the DA's office. Gentleman came out and said, thank you very much for coming. We just want to ask a few questions. It turned out that this gentleman was supposedly the son of the alleged godfather of Boston.
Hmm.
I told him the story, an actor looking for financing for his film. You know, you talk to many people. You hear financing for a film, and it was a legitimate company, and that was the extent of it. And I put them in touch with the producer and director. Cut to 2 years later, I'm in Malta filming the Christopher Columbus Discovery film with Marlon Brando, and my publicist calls me up and says, the L.A. Times wants to talk to you about this venture. And I says, what was that? I'd forgotten the whole incident. Long story short, the L.A. Times wanted to talk to me. I says, when I get back from Malta, I'll talk to them. And they said, well, it'd be very interesting for you to talk to us. It happened that there was a guy that was wired, I guess, and this person that I had met was saying things in the parking lot of Cafe Roma that he was going to break my legs and do all of this and stuff. So the LA Times, there's a story, says, and absolutely it was an innocent story, said he was just looking for financing for the film, but the mob goes to Hollywood was the LA Times article, and I was on the cover of this LA Times magazine, and on the inside, it absolutely said, well, you know, he was just an innocent guy meeting a guy at Cafe Roma for a thing. But the Italian-American connection was terrible that they would profile me. So it doesn't bother me that. I think if people are innocent, let them be questions, bring up issues, and let it go.
Why did you make your movie The Dukes?
In the mid-70s, I read an article while I was studying with Adler about steelworkers being laid off, 25,000 people laid off. I then... my father got laid off a year later. And as a young guy, this affected me. That, you mean there's no security? And I was reading a book by Alvin Toffler called The Third Wave, where he talks about an industrial age and a technological one, and how the transitional period, the economy is going to go through a very difficult time, and jobs will be lost globally. and it'll be devastating at a certain point. I wanted to tell this story with a light, unpretentious touch. And the first film I had done was with Frank Sinatra, called Contract on Cherry Street. And I met a gentleman, Jay Black, from Jay and the Americans, who was the second Jay of Jay and the Americans. And they had tremendous doo-wop stuff, Cara Mia and This Magic Moment, and stuff I used to sing as a kid. So he plays my brother in the Sinatra film. And I was hearing stories from him that echoed what was happening in the steel workers and around the country at that time. We were in a recession, about how in the 1960s they were filling up Madison Square Garden. Of course, the British invasion came along, and these guys were having hard times getting little gigs at Jolly Rogers or other places. I wanted to tell the story about how we would have to reinvent ourselves in terms of a transitional period from this economic, from an industrial age to a technological one, and I wanted to tell it with the style of a commedia all'italiana, which is a outpouring of the neorealists, that they then took an uplifting aspect to the social situation to give an answer to the to leave you with hope and a very spirited feeling at the end of a film. And wrote the first draft, kept it in the drawer, and the last 2 months we've seen what happens to the economy. So it's a story that really resonates to what the everyman is going through right now and some of the moral choices they might meet when they have to pay their bills, pay a dentist bill or get a medical bill. What happens when the bottom falls out and these characters pull a heist of dental gold, which is very funny, but it's not the answer to their lives. Getting back to their true self is the real answer to the film, and the last quarter of the film gives us a solution in terms of us pulling together as a people and bringing light to the world. So it has a very uplifting message. You can go to the website, www.thedukes-movie.com, and see the trailer, and there's a lot of extensive stuff you can read about it.
Robert Davi, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
I just want to tell you, Michael, it's been a pleasure being on your show. I listen to it, and go out and keep bringing the message to the country.
Savage.
Savage Nation. We've been talking about so many topics. Those two interviews were great. They were so good that I listened to the replay of them, you know, while we were playing them. I did them earlier in the day. I mean, they were great. I mean, both of them were great. In fact, the movie I'm going to watch tonight on CD or DVD, I haven't really watched it yet, but then the first one on the LA Gangster Story series, I loved that in the LA Times, which is why I chose to interview him. And I asked the top attorney down here, I won't mention his name, about that. And I mean, this guy's top. He knows the whole criminal justice system in Los Angeles. He's been around a long time. I said, is it actually true that gangster squad kept out, let us say, organized crime to the extent that it has appeared in other cities? He said, yes, it's absolutely true. I don't know. You know, that's a world I don't truly know. And frankly, I'd rather not know it. That's all. Let's go to the callers. WRKO in Boston. You're on the Savage Nation. Alan, go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it's a pleasure. My name's Alan. I wanted to ask how the political party was coming, the Savage Nation political party. And second off, I was wondering if the Fairness Doctrine takes effect. Are we going to have somewhat of a renaissance of sorts, seeing as how we're going to resemble more of a social state like France? The reason why I was thinking was I was thinking you were talking about, I don't know if it was in a static microphone, but you were talking about some of the golden age equipment, like your microphones and things that we used to produce in great abundance with great quality in a bygone era. And
I don't know how the Fairness Doctrine would lead to greater creativity. I think it would curtail creativity.
I believe you're right.
Let's talk about the Fairness Doctrine one more minute. I am the first host in America to say the following. Bring it on. Because if Pelosi and Obama and Feinstein want to try a communist dictatorship in this country by controlling speech, which they find offensive, particularly political speech, I say, fine, let's start with NPR, which I find very offensive because it's all left-wing all the time. And we're going to force them to diversify the political opinion on NPR, which I don't think they're going to want to do. Do you?
No.
All right. Well, good. Well, that's what I mean when I say the Savage Army. I'll have 52 million people emailing Pelosi and Feinstein and Obama saying, you want the Fairness Doctrine, start with NPR. I think that may give them an idea of what's coming if they continue this rubbish. Thank you for the call from WRKO. Honestly, thank you for the call from Boston, one of my favorite cities. I haven't been there in so long, but I've always loved it. It is sort of a sister city to San Francisco in so many ways, good and bad. It is geographically beautiful, Boston. It is architecturally fascinating, Boston. And it's extremely off-the-chart, insanely liberal, Boston. But that's what you have to put up with if you want beauty and geography, unfortunately. Houston, Texas. Andrew, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Yes, Michael.
Yes.
Two things I'd like to do. One, I'd like to compliment you on the stories. As a father of young kids, I was really intrigued by your story about the girl and the father.
The nympho in Alley Pond Park?
Well, yes. I thought that was just, I don't think I can be that compassionate, but it was just touching.
Yeah, but the story is written without one F word, without any dirty words, and it's really all about compassion for a girl who could not control her sexual impulses. And moreover, it's also a story about her father and her, which I think is very touching.
And I agree. And my second comment, if I could, is that listening to a recent listener to your show, is that Mr. Berg you had on, I was mesmerized by his comments about Obama and his whether or not he's a U.S. citizen or not. My question is, the press has been all over Obama. Has his grandmother ever been buried?
I have no idea about that story, but I'm shocked that this so-called press corps is so useless that a story of this magnitude would be ignored by every last one of them, with the exception of several websites, including WorldNet Daily. I am shocked that the so-called mainstream media would let a story of this magnitude go by. For example, if stories were circulating about John McCain's birth certificate, do you think they would have let that go by? Of course they wouldn't. We know that the press has become worthless. We know that the mainstream media, or midstream media, as I so affectionately call it, has lost whatever shred of credibility they may have had. And we also know why their newspapers are going out of business. I think we're going to see a tremendous decline in the press in this country as a result, direct result, of their supine nature and their slavish worship of Obama. And I thank you, my good friend. I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity because you love that story about the nympho in Alley Pond Park. And I told it not because I wanted to make fun of her, but because I wanted to show you that even that kind of behavior was understood in that case by her father at that time. And you have to read the story to understand where I'm coming with it. I don't have the time nor the inclination to read a story right now. But these are the last few weeks before the holidays, and I'd suggest that you do pick up a copy of the book, Savage Radio Stories, only available on michaelsavage.com, only available on Savage, michaelsavage.com. I don't really want to talk about the bailout. I think that was covered in great detail to this point. We know that the bailout is not only socialism, but it's criminality. We do know that the bailout is fundamentally only for those who lobby by giving donations to the right politicians. It's a buyout. It's not a bailout. It's a buyout and a buy-off, if you want to put it to you that way, in my opinion. Homosexuals begin marrying in Connecticut, don't you know? A so-called judge in Connecticut cleared the way for so-called same-sex marriage in so-called Connecticut amid so-called nationwide so-called protests over the outcome of a so-called voter measure in so-called California. That story is up on michaelsavage.com. At least you can laugh. Is it still legal to make fun of people and laugh? I guess it is until Dianne Feinstein brings the shopping carts of China come home to roost, so to speak. The so-called shopping carts of China. You know, it's not so bad that her husband made his fortune, or a good portion of his fortune, in trading with China. God only knows how and why, and I'm not accusing him of anything, but I find it odd that a sitting U.S. senator would be on committees that oversaw bills that had direct results with regard to her own family's income without one quiver of a protest by the so-called Republicans in the so-called Senate. But then again, we understand it's a so-called Senate with so-called congressmen, and we also understand it's a so-called government with so-called Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson. Louisiana John, you're on the Savage Nation.
Mike, I have just found you in the last couple of months. I very much enjoy your show. I don't agree all talk radio, but I very much enjoy your show.
So do you agree with me 50% of the time, 80% of the time, 10% or no percent?
Two idiots that have talk shows. I at least you're truthful and you're honest. And as far as your stories go, I don't know them all, but I love the one where you was riding with your father to deliver the artwork to the guy from the circus. I just thought that was...
Oh, I love that story. That's amazing. That is an amazing story. John, you're going to get a free copy because I want you to walk around with it in Louisiana in a plain brown wrapper. Psychological Nudity, Savage Radio Stories is flying out to you tomorrow. Incidentally, the first edition, first printing, I have 1,200 copies left. There'll never be another one. I'm not making it up. I don't lie to you on this show. I never lie to you on this show. Sure, I withhold certain statements, but I don't lie to you when I speak at all, ever. This is like a communion for me. This is like a confessional for me. This is far more than a radio studio for me. This is it for me, however long it may last, 6 weeks, 6 years, or whatever. This is a confessional for me, and I hope it has been for you as well. So when I tell you that the first edition, first printing is almost gone, guess what? It's almost gone. There's only 1,200 copies, and I have reordered a first edition, second printing, which will be available in approximately 2 weeks for your Christmas orders. So if you want that rare first edition, go for it. It's that simple. Virginia, Ken, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Hi, how are you? It's an honor to get a chance to talk to
friend,
you.
Friend, we have only 20 seconds. Make your one statement, and I got to run.
Okay, I love your show. You've changed my thinking.
God bless you. I've changed your thinking. Remember what you learned today. Judas Bader Ginsburg is her name. It's not Justice Bader Ginsburg, in my opinion. The ACLU lawyer on the Supreme Court is Judas Bader Ginsburg.
Savage.